podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the latest edition of the Punt Podcast here with William Hill. My name is Dave Kellner and we have an action-packed podcast coming up. We'll hear from Derek McGovern and Andy Excel very shortly on the televised games in the Premier League. We've got Simon Mullock, the chief football writer for the Sunday Mirror, joining us later on as well. We'll reflect on the Champions League, talk about Player of the Year, should Kevin De Bruyne be a shoo-in for that award, and we'll also get Simon's thoughts on Manchester United versus Liverpool as well. Pete Farries, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross will give their best bets in the Football League, and on the back of a winning nap, we'll have the European best bet with Sam Norris as well. But first of all, as ever, it's time to get stuck into the Premier League betting in the company of the dynamic duo. It is, first of all, Derek McGovern. Good morning to you, Derek.
Good morning, Dave. How are you doing? All right.
I'm very well. Are you?
Yes, yeah. Great. Yeah, just snowed in Liverpool here. We never get snow here. And just look out the window and my garden for once looks as good as the neighbours.
There you have it. And Andy Excel is joining us. How's your garden looking, Andy?
Well, the far end of it is quite a way away, so I can't really see that. But, you know. we're looking good. We're looking good, yeah.
Very good. Let's get stuck in then, chaps. And we start with the big one this weekend at Old Trafford, Manchester United versus Liverpool. Manchester United 13-8, the draw 11-5, and Liverpool 7-4. The enhanced odds, Romelu Lukaku to score and Manchester United to win, was 13-5. That's been enhanced to 3-1. And Mohamed Salah to score and Liverpool to win was 14-5. That's been enhanced to 100-30. I was looking through Twitter midweek, Derek, and I follow a professional punter by the name of Nick Goff, and he made the point that in the reverse fixture back in October, the draw no bet prices, basically even money each of two, were exactly the same for that game as they are now for this one. And United, of course, were away that day. It shows you the disparity in the performances since October between these two sides.
Well, yeah. I mean, the nail is damn it. A joint favourite,
yeah.
Even though United are at home and they're above Liverpool. I mean, that's what I've been saying for a while. People love to say the league table never lies, but it's been lying all season in saying that United are the second best team in the country. I'm not even sure if the second best team in Manchester, Dave, not with Oldham's form picking up. I mean, there's a big gulf in class between Liverpool and United now. And we know who's leading in that class gulf. Mourinho, I've been saying for ages that he turned Paul Pogba into Paul Parker. You know that. I've said that a million times. He's also managed to turn Alexis Sanchez into Laurie Sanchez. There's two wonderful players there playing like selling places. Chris Smalling and Phil Jones still playing centre-half. They're only still there because Sunderland can't take them off their hands anymore. Young and Valencia, they're both 32 fullbacks. Luke Shaw's about 32 stone. United are in disarray. And that performance against Palace, okay, they got 3 points in the end. But, you know, this big, big worrying signs there if you're a Man United fan. Bigger even than being a Man United fan. I think Liverpool are certainties here, absolute certainties. And one other thing to remember, by the way, is United have got Seville in the Champions League next week as well. That's a big, big game for them. So I'm all over Liverpool here.
7-4 Liverpool to win the game. By the way, these two teams have drawn in their last four meetings. 11-5, biggest price of the three, of course. For this one to end all square on Saturday lunchtime. What about that game, Andy, on Monday night? Phenomenal finish from Nemanja Matic in the final minute for Manchester United to steal 3 points really away from Crystal Palace. Does that affect your thinking coming into this game at all?
Not an awful lot. I think Derek's pretty much summed up the public feel about the game, that United get results, but they don't turn you on, and Liverpool do. You know, it's one of those things that I'm going to do my normal dry bookmaker bit and say, you've just said it, the biggest price is the most likely outcome, the draw. You can't pick between the two teams on prices. So why would you? The draw's probably going to be happening, and it's probably a score draw.
You said that Derek had summed it up in terms of how the public is thinking coming into this game. Putting your bookmaking hat on, Andy, here, where do you expect the cash to, or which team do you expect to field most cash for in this game?
I think most of it will be for Liverpool, just because of that feeling that United seem to keep squeaking home, but they're not actually that good. And yeah, I have a lot of the same feelings as Derek as regard where they are overall and their development, which isn't development, it's actually regression. And it's just taking good players and turning them into average because they haven't developed a system. They're signing players and they haven't got a way of fitting them into a team. So it just doesn't look good all round. So whereas Liverpool look like they're going in the right direction. So that's where the public money will go. But I think we might get some shrewd money on the other side as well.
Manchester United 13-8, the draw 11-5, Liverpool in the betting at 7-4. Just want to ask you one more question, Derek. Liverpool, we all know, have been superb away from home this season, but they've benefited from teams attacking them and hitting them on the counter. Jose Mourinho, relentlessly negative, even though the crowd will be, they'll be urging Manchester United forward. Mourinho's pragmatism in this game, they'll just defend, won't they, Manchester United?
Well, you'd think, knowing Mourinho, yeah, that's probably how he'll instruct his side to. But I don't know, sometimes in games like this, you know, United-Liverpool, everybody knows how the enmity between the two sides and the two sets of fans. Maybe those orders will just be ignored in the heat of the moment. I've no doubt that he'll be saying to them, right, just keep it tight early on, don't do anything stupid. I can imagine it being 0-0 at half-time. But I've just got a feeling, if you Man United at home to Liverpool, you've got the fans hating Liverpool, you can't sit back for 90 minutes at Old Trafford against your biggest enemy. You just can't.
Looking forward to watching that one Saturday lunchtime. Chelsea versus Crystal Palace, Saturday 5:30, this one at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea 100-30 on. The draw 4-1, Crystal Palace 10-1. Enhanced odds, Alvaro Morata and Eden Hazard both to score. Was 11-4, now 7-2. I think I'd want that price for Morata to have a shot on target in the game, in all honesty. Listening to Palace fans ahead of this one, Andy, as well, what happened on Monday night, we've referenced it already on the podcast, is a microcosm of their season. They've played well, they've looked good, but they've been too open and they've ended up capitulating.
Yeah, there is an argument that can be made of that. Obviously, they're struggling with a load of injuries. They're beginning to get one or two back. There's possibly another couple back this week. I think Kabay might be back this week, which could be important. So they're beginning to get some players back, and the performances are all right. And I've said this before about Chelsea, and they demonstrated it in the game the other night. They're not interested in the league, not at all. And they've got a game coming up that they're more interested in. So I think Palace at 10-1 here is not the worst thing you'll ever see. I quite like that. I think they can nick a result here.
Palace 10-1 to win the game, double figure price. Derek, Antonio Conte wants the sack, doesn't he? He wants the sack.
Yeah, he does. He's playing out time now as Chelsea manager, and the players know that. You can tell that by the performances they're putting in. They're non-performances by Chelsea right now. He doesn't seem to have a system. The players look bewildered. It's going to end in tears, no doubt. And the players, you know, Andy's right about Palace's price here. Who on earth would be interested in backing Chelsea at 3-10 when they're not interested? They're not playing for the manager, and they're playing Barcelona on Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever it is next week. And they've got a manager who looks, who wants to be anywhere but on the touchline. Palace at 5-6 with a 2-goal start. I'm all over that.
Palace plus 2 on the handicap. One man that has enhanced his reputation despite Chelsea going through this awful patch is Willian. He's had a hand in 16 goals in his last 17 starts for Chelsea. Scored 11 in that spell as well. He's 6-4 to score any time and 5-1 to be the first name on the score sheet on Saturday tea time as well. So maybe if you fancy Chelsea, Willian the man to look at for the Blues.
Just something regarding Willian there. Do you notice he's the player that's been out of the team and trying to get himself back in? So he's the one trying because he's got a World Cup coming up that he wants to get in Brazil's team. It's all about motivation for these Chelsea players for me. And that just sums it up.
Taking a little bit of a chance with the European nap this week as we head to France for a 7 o'clock kickoff between Lille and Montpellier. Two sides that the traders are struggling to separate, with both teams priced up at 7-4. Admittedly, Lille need the points much more than Montpellier. Their Ligue 1 status could depend on it, as they're currently second bottom and 2 points away from safety. Whilst Montpellier are having a nice season, they're currently sixth in the table, but won't be able to break into the European spots, so 3 points will mean more to the hosts. And granted, home advantage might be a good leveller, but surely Montpellier should be marginal favourites here if we take into consideration the two sides' differing seasons. They've only lost once in 2018, and that was a very excusable defeat at the hands of PSG. They arrive into this one off the back of a good draw against Lyon last time out, and they also thumped Lille 3-0 in the reverse fixture this season and had the game put to bed by the half-hour mark. The betting should have Montpellier down as favourites for me, which makes the 7-4 value, and they're my nap this week.
Arsenal versus Watford next. Arsenal 1-2 to win this game at the Emirates. The draw 17-5, Watford 5-1. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to score and Arsenal to win was 6-5. That's been enhanced to 5-4. And Troy Deeney to score and Watford to win, that was 8-1. That's been enhanced to 9-1. Derek, after Watford's win against West Brom, Troy Deeney was given man of the match, and he said, "I'm the best of a bad bunch," which maybe doesn't reflect well on Watford's on his teammates. Watford have won 3 of their last 4 now, including those last two by a 2-0. How this Watford team are 9th in the league is beyond me. It's a damning indictment, as far as I'm concerned, about the quality away from the top 4 or 5.
Exactly. Well, Everton are 11th and they've lost 5 straight. So, yeah, the Premier League is diabolical. It's absolutely diabolical. And you say about the top 5 or 6. Well, it's not the top 6 anymore because Arsenal are diabolical and Chelsea are getting there. I mean, the league, it's awful. It's an awful league. I mean, you know, I've always said for a long time the best league in the world is the human league, but no one ever seems to listen to me. I just think that I can't believe how bad Arsenal have become so quickly. I mean, I've been your biggest critic for a number of years.
Yeah,
now.
You were ahead of your time, Derek, some might say.
I've been, yes. I'm the Martin Pieces of the modern-day tipping front. They're shocking. They're absolutely shocking. And it's interesting that 88% of people want Wenger out as manager. That's according to a survey of Arsenal players, I think. Arsenal are 1-2 to beat Watford. Liverpool played them next weekend at Anfield. Liverpool are 1-5. You know, that tells its own story. Arsenal are 15 points behind Liverpool after 29 games, I think it is, of the season. They're absolutely shocking. And 1-2, it's a half-brother to Chelsea at 3-10. I couldn't back them at all. But I looked at the price and thought, Watford only 5-1? That's not giving much away, is it? But if there's going to be a winner, I've got a feeling it's like more likely to be Watford than Arsenal. This is two bad teams with no confidence. I think Watford under this new manager will be the kind of team Arsenal do not want to play, who have always traditionally hated playing against. So I'm a bit out of loss on this picture, but I'm going to play on the handicap. That's what I normally do, and I'm a bit of a loss. So I'm going to go Watford with a goal start at 6-4.
Okay, Watford odds against +1 in the handicap market. Watford have won their last couple against Arsenal as well, which is worth bearing in mind. Just to bring you back down to earth, Derek, you have napped West Ham and West Brom in the previous 2 weeks.
Yeah, I would have gone for Brighton last week, but Andy pinched it off me.
Whatever you tell me, Derek, I believe. Andy, what are your thoughts on Arsenal-Watford? What's more to say about Arsene Wenger and Arsenal?
Well, there's nothing more to say about that. I think it's pretty much all out there now. You've just said Watford have won the last 2. They've actually won 3 out of the last 5 against Arsenal, which also the same stat applies to Crystal Palace against Chelsea, interestingly. But yeah, they've won 3 out of the last 5 and 2 of them at Arsenal. And like you say, in the current vibe, as it were, and we're talking before Arsenal play the first leg of the Europa League game against AC Milan, but they're going to be more interested in that again. I'm sort of on the same wavelength as Derek. I like the Palace 10-1, but I'm not so keen on the 5-1 Watford. Along a similar line, double chance, Watford or draw 13-10.
Okay, Watford or the draw for Andy. Bournemouth versus Spurs is coming up next. Bournemouth are 9-2, the draw 100-30, Spurs in the betting 8-15. Enhanced odds, Callum Wilson to score and Bournemouth to win was 15-2, that's been enhanced to 8-1. Harry Kane to score and Spurs to win was even money, that's now odds against at 11-10. We're going to talk with Simon Mullock, the chief football writer from the Sunday Mirror, about Spurs and their Champions League performance against Juventus in a few moments' time. But Andy, that could have an effect on their performance perhaps on Sunday afternoon as well, because a bitter blow for Spurs to be knocked out of the Champions League. And even though they're unbeaten in their last 11 Premier League matches, Mauricio Pochettino's going to have his work cut out, I think, getting them motivated for this game.
Yeah, possibly. I think they're a strong group, though. They'll be all right. I'm not overly worried about a negative reaction. Obviously, it was a terrible blow as an Arsenal fan last night seeing that happen. Yeah, that's the only ray of sunshine in that particular part of my life at the moment. But yeah, I just keep looking at Tottenham as well. It's like watching Arsenal in a time warp from 10 years ago. All the same things are getting said about them. They're moving ground. They've got to win trophies. They've got to qualify for the Champions League. Bloody, bloody, that. And they have got to start winning stuff. But I think they'll be all right on Sunday. They've actually got a very good record against Bournemouth. And I think they'll probably win again.
Okay. Spurs to win the game at 8-15. If you are looking at that Harry Kane enhancement as well, it's well worth noting he's already scored 13 away Premier League goals this season. Only 10 players have ever scored more away from home in a single Premier League campaign. Kevin Phillips holds the outright record. He got 16 back at the turn of the century. Derek, how do you view Bournemouth versus Spurs?
Well, Bournemouth's recent home record is excellent. I can't remember the last time. I think it was Liverpool the last time they lost at home in well before Christmas. Since then, they've beaten Everton, they've beaten Arsenal in the Premier League, beaten Stoke. It's a decent record they've got there. And they're meeting Tottenham at a decent time as well. They've got to be softened up by what happened in midweek, because everything was hunky-dory for Spurs after that first leg in Turin. And I think they got the backside smacked in midweek. And I'm not sure they've been that experienced a side to come bounce back so quickly. Their away record is not great either, by the way, Spurs. I mean, they've played 14 games away from home in the Premier League. Failed to win 7 of them, which is not that great when you're supposed to be one of these, up-and-coming sides that's going to be challenging for the league title. I'm not saying I'm the biggest fan of Bournemouth. I can never quite catch him right, and the manager annoys me. He just seems like an over-enthusiastic supply teacher, Eddie Howe, to me. Probably a geography one, but they seem to be getting results, and I think if I'm going to have a dabble, Palace at 10-1 is interesting for me. I fancy having a little bit of a dabble on them, but I'm going to go give Bournemouth a go as well. I think this is a softened up Tottenham side here. Bournemouth 9-2 for me. They're not doing anything wrong at home in a couple of months now, Bournemouth.
We finished the weekend with Stoke versus Manchester City. This is an 8 p.m. kickoff on Monday night. Stoke are 12-1, the draw 5-1, City are 2-9. Jerdan Shaqiri to score and Stoke to win was 22-1. That's been enhanced to 33-1. And Leroy Sané, who has been sensational in recent weeks, for him to score and Manchester City to win was 11-10. That's been enhanced to 6-5. Derek, it's weird with Stoke because under Mark Hughes they were scoring but they couldn't defend. Under Paul Lambert they can defend but they can't score, and they've looked a lot tighter defensively than we expect from a Stoke side this season. They've drawn 4 of their last 5. A couple of those have ended goalless, but obviously against Manchester City they're going to have the work cut out, and that's why they're 12-1.
Yeah. I mean, the recent record isn't that bad. Is it 4 draws and a win in their last 6? But they've been, those fixtures, you look closer, and you see those fixtures were against Huddersfield, Watford, Bournemouth, Brighton, Leicester and Southampton. I mean, you couldn't have an easy set of fixtures, really, unless you were Celtic. So I'm not getting worked up with Stoke. They tightened up at the back, and they had to. And you knew that under Paul Lambert, that's what would happen. They seem to rely on a stroke of Shaqiri genius or something to get anything from games these days. They're playing the best team in the country. Forget what happened in midweek for City in the Champions League. That tie was well over. They lost to a team of chocolatiers, I think, in the, at home against him. But it didn't matter. They're through 2-9 away from home, City. It's not a, even the big hitters. I'm not even, you know, it's not buying money, that, is it? It's not, you know, you could actually see a one-all draw. You know, I do think City will win, but never in a million years would it be backing them at 2-9. I'll have to go on a handicap again. It's just my default system for fixtures that trouble me, i.e. everyone. 6-4 City minus 2 goals, because I think if they get one early, they'll probably win in the cakewalk.
I think you've done the Eddie Howe gag before as well, Derek. I'm just thinking back to that Bournemouth preview. I'm pretty sure you did that on the podcast 3 weeks ago. I'm not saying you recycle these jokes.
Get rid of it then.
Stoke versus Manchester City. Andy?
Yeah, you talk about how far teams have fallen. Stoke used to be the place everybody hated to go, and now they're 12-1 at home. It's shocking, isn't it, how far they've fallen. You know, it's... You can't go against City here, can you? They're just, I don't think we've really realised how much better they are than everybody else yet. The league table tells you that, but I just think they are that good. So every week I try and find a way to find a creative way to back them. I think Aguero is almost certain to score in this game. So if you put him in together with the City win, I think that's about 7-10. So that's finding a way to have a bet on Man City for me, and yeah. I wouldn't mind doing that.
Aguero, by the way, he's got 8 in his last 8 against Stoke in the Premier League. He's actually scored a brace in his last 2 away games against them as well, so that further solidifies the argument for Aguero to score in this game and Manchester City to win, which is 7-10. And when you think City are 2-9 to win the game, if he starts, in all likelihood he will score in a City win. So 7-10 on that. Are this City team the best you've ever seen in the Premier League, Andy?
We were talking about this the other day. They probably are the best team. And the only other one you'd really think that, well, I would only ever put up against them would be the Arsenal Invincibles. Now, I think City are a better team overall, but if they played each other, you're going to get into that generational thing, don't you? You know, it'd be a really good game to watch. The only other one I've had thrown in there is the Man United treble team, but I'm not having that.
Derek?
It probably is. It probably is. I mean, you're right about the Invincibles team. I mean, I don't think City have got anybody like Thierry Henry. And Bergkamp played in the Invincibles team, didn't he?
Yeah,
I mean, I don't put those two would walk in the City team, obviously, and quite a few others. It'd be an interesting one. I mean, City should be the best team in the Premier League, given the money they've spent. I mean, it's £50 million a position, it seems. You know, so we wouldn't be, you know, putting out bunting and ribbon saying, giving them that tag. but I would say the Arsenal Invincible team would win them very, very close.
Okay, let's get the naps then. Derek, I don't want you moaning, so you can go first this week.
Who are Huddersfield playing?
Swansea at home.
That'll do. No, I'm only kidding. I'm going to give Huddersfield are costing me more money than my kids this season opposing them. I'm not doing that. I'm going to go for Liverpool to win at Man United. I just think they're good things.
Yeah, 7-4 Liverpool. Andy?
Crystal Palace. I'm going for the big
here
place.
Here we go. This is getting to desperate times call for desperate measures,
off,
don't they?
I'm off
podcast.
The back of a winner.
You are indeed. 100-30 last week. Palace at 10-1. Derek, I'm going to go with Swansea to beat Huddersfield this week away from home.
You just, too. I can't believe it.
I can't not. Swansea in good form. I agree with Derek. Huddersfield aren't that good. 21-10, Swansea to go in to beat Huddersfield away from home. So that treble, Liverpool at 7-4, Palace at 10-1, Swansea at 21-10. Just under 100-1 on the punt treble this weekend.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now, joining myself and Derek on the podcast, it's the chief football writer for the Sunday Mirror, Simon Mullock. First of all, a warm welcome to you, Simon. Good to have you on the podcast.
Thanks, Dave. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
We're going to start off with a reflection on the Champions League. I'll just spin you through the latest betting following the midweek fixtures. Manchester City 11-4, Real Madrid 4-1, Barcelona 9-2, Bayern Munich 9-2 here with William Hill, Juventus 8-1, Liverpool 9-1, 16-1 for Chelsea, Manchester United 20-1, Roma 66-1, Shakhtar Donetsk 100-1, Sevilla 150-1, and the other two don't matter. We must start with Spurs. Simon, I was playing football last night and had to miss the second half completely, but when I stepped onto that pitch, Spurs were 1-0 up, Heung-min Son had scored, and I thought it was inconceivable that Spurs were going to be knocked out of the competition, but a disastrous 3 minutes for Spurs, and it will be so disappointing for Mauricio Pochettino and his men because they'd built such a strong position and dominated large periods of that tie. To go out on the back of a couple of silly mistakes will be ultimately frustrating.
I mean, if you look at the two games overall, I think Spurs were on the back foot for probably about 20 minutes of both games. 20 minutes overall, and have ended up losing the tie. Absolutely incredible, really. I was actually at the Man City game last night, but I spent most of my time watching the Tottenham game on the TV monitor that was in the press box, because obviously it was a game that was so finely balanced. Spurs just looked the better side overall over the two games. Yet here they are being knocked out, and once again we're talking about, you know, are they a team of chokers? Every time they get close to doing something pretty special, they just fall short, and it has got to the point now where you think, are they going to take that final step under Maurizio Pochettino? Are those players going to stick around with Spurs, because they just don't seem to be able to make that final step to become a winning club? That was a massive disappointment for them last night, because it was such a great opportunity, fantastic performance and result to come back in the first leg from 2-0 down, got their noses in front at Wembley, looked much the better team, and then, like you say, Juventus do what they do so well. Harden, Champions League performers, scored two goals with two attacks, and then you just knew that they were going to shut shop, and we just saw that fantastic goal line clearance when Harry Kane's header hit the post and rolled along the line, and you just see why Italians make such great defenders, because it was a Juventus player that reacted first, and that seemed to be the case all night in the final 20 minutes. Juventus do what they've done for years and years, and they were able to see the game out.
And some Spurs fans have reacted to Giorgio Chiellini's assertion at the end of that game that Spurs always miss something to arrive at the end, questioning maybe their temperament and their vulnerability in big matches, Derek. Have we got to put things in perspective here? I mean, when Mauricio Pochettino took over from Andre Villas-Boas and Tim Sherwood was in there as caretaker manager as well, they were in disarray. He's taken them to new heights, this Spurs side. Is it important to put that result into perspective?
Well, yeah, yes and no. Yes, because they're not the first victims of smash and grab raids where they dominate matches and then get chinned by a couple of sucker punches or one of them. And they're meeting a team that's been in the final of the Champions League twice in the last 3 years, so it's absolutely no disgrace that. Juventus did what they had to do. They were 5-2 to win in 90 minutes last night, and given that Spurs weren't exactly playing at home, people seem to forget that. That was a great price, Juventus, by the way.
But I love that you're after timing your best bets now,
yeah,
Derek.
I have to do that now. But you just go back into what all the pundits said last night. At this level, it's know-how more than anything, isn't it? Teams get through on know-how. Like, for instance, when Man City got to the semi-final 2 seasons ago against Real Madrid, there was no belief. They hadn't been there before. There was no belief. They were woeful in those two. I think they only lost 1-0 in aggregate, but they were actually given a good hide. Another thing, by the way, going back to Spurs, had they got through, you know, they'd have been in the quarter-final of the Champions League and everyone had been raving about it. But Leicester got there last season, the quarter-final of the Champions League. You know, it's not hard to get to the last eight. That's when the tournament begins. You look at Liverpool, they're in the last eight now. They've met no one. In their group, they had Seville, Spartak Moscow and Maribor. How bad are they? Well, they beat two of them 7-0. Then you got a crap Porto team in the first knockout stage. It's, you know, getting to the quarter-finals of the Champions League is nothing. getting further, yeah, I'll take my hat off to them then. And by the way, it just goes back to what Rafa Benitez did in Liverpool. Yeah, everyone remembers what he did in 2005, getting to the final in his third season. 2 years later, he was in the final again. He got to the final twice in three seasons. It took Fergie 22 years to do that at Old Trafford. Incredible performance that by Rafa.
Let's talk about PSG as well, Simon, because it's not just all about the English clubs. PSG will be aggrieved at having underperformed against Real Madrid over those two legs. And the regime at PSG have spent so much money, £1 billion they've spent building this squad. Unai Emery has his head on the chopping block now, having failed to qualify for the last eight. It's strange, isn't it? Because you compare PSG with Manchester City in terms of their revenue, in terms of how much money these two regimes can put into those respective clubs. And Manchester City have done it one way, by strengthening in key areas defensively. And PSG have just gone out and bought seemingly the best players in the world and not thought about structure.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you know, signing Neymar for £200 million last summer was supposed to be the final step to Paris Saint-Germain. They lose him with a broken metatarsal, and surprise, surprise, they get knocked out by Real Madrid. And let's be fair, they've been knocked out by a Real Madrid team who've been absolutely nowhere near their best this season. But, as Derek said, it's all about know-how in the European Cup. Real Madrid have got that. They've got that experience. They're looking for their third European Cup win on the bounce. And they just looked a much more experienced team over two legs. I thought Real Madrid's experience shone through in both games against Paris Saint-Germain, particularly in the first game, where I thought the French club looked the better side for most of the first half. You end up losing that game 3-1, and it was just I think the loss of Neymar was crucial for them. I think the belief kind of, you could see it drain out of them in that second game. They never looked like a team that thought they could really turn it around. I don't think they've got beyond the last eight since the Qatar takeover took place.
Yeah, that's correct.
So it's quite worrying. It's quite worrying for them, and you would think it's extremely worrying for Emery. I don't think he will be there. I'm pretty certain he won't be there next year. And if we're talking about managers who can kind of build teams, then you wonder whether Maurizio Pochettino will come into the frame to replace him in the summer, which again will be a big worry for all Tottenham fans.
Manchester City came through unscathed despite being beaten at home by Basel, their first defeat at home this season in all competitions. And Player of the Year betting available on the William Hill website as well. This is for the PFA Player of the Year. That's the one we are betting on. But of course, the Football Writers Association have their Player of the Year awards at the end of the campaign as well. Kevin De Bruyne is 1-5 in this market. Harry Kane 6-1. Mohamed Salah is 6-1. David Silva 40-1. Raheem Sterling 50-1. And Eden Hazard, inexplicably in the betting as well, at 100-1. Kevin De Bruyne 1-5, Derek, in this market. It is such a short price, and he started the season sensationally. But it's been about this City team as a whole, in my mind, not about one player.
Yeah, but he's been the shining star, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, they've got some great players in that City team. We all know that. But he's, every time you watch him, I can't take my eyes off him. He's 1-5 to win it, and City are 2-9 to win at Stoke this weekend. I know I'd rather be on similar prices, I think, but De Bruyne's already won it. You mentioned that Harry Kane and Mo Salah are his chief rivals. Harry Kane, yeah, he deserves to be in the reckoning, but I don't think he's had as good a season as he did last season, by the way. And Salah, I've made my comments about Salah clear on here. I don't think he's in the same league, to be honest. When the goals dry up, I don't think he'll give Liverpool anything. But having said that, Clive Allen won both Player of the Year awards in 86-87 when he scored nothing but score goals. So Salah, I suppose, must be in with a chance. But De Bruyne will win. He deserves to be 1-5. If he was 1-10, I still might even consider backing him. He'll be the second Belgian to win the award in the last 3 years. Only one Englishman has won it in the last 10. Mm. Incredible, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, Derek. Why do you dislike goal scorers so much, Derek?
No, I don't dislike goal scorers. I dislike goal scorers if that's all they've got. Harry Kane, he's got a lot more. If Harry Kane doesn't score a goal in a game, you'll still get an awful lot from him. with Mo Salah, I don't think you do. I'm in a minority one here. I'm sure Simon will shoot me down as well. All I do is argue in pubs about on this point. But I said much the same about Fernando Torres, and I was proven right in those days. So, yeah, I'm hoping I'm going to be proven right here. Well, I hope I'm not. I'm not, actually. Just for Liverpool, it would be great if he turned out to be superb. But I watched him. I was at Anfield last week, and I watched him. I watched him closely because I thought, I might just be wrong about him. I'm not. He was rubbish.
Simon, start with your thoughts on Mo Salah. Then I want to ask you about some of those City players as well. You can't agree with Derek, can you? Let's keep the sanity on this podcast and make sure he's still in the minority of one by the end of it.
The thing is about Salah, is, I mean, we all knew that after the time that he'd had at Roma that Liverpool were buying a good player. But, I mean, he's been absolutely sensational this season. 32 goals from a starting position, kind of wide on the wing. I think he's just been perhaps the signing of the season, to be fair. You know, he's got ice in his veins in front of goal. I think he's been absolutely fantastic. I've got to say, I'm also a great Kevin De Bruyne fan, but I remember, for example, when Manchester United did the treble in 1999, and it was, I think it was, if I'm right, I think it was David Ginola ended up winning the FWA Player of the Year award, and Sir Alex Ferguson made the comment, the worst thing to do is to give players a vote because they know absolutely nothing about football. You know, the United vote was split, and I've got to say, I thought David Silva would be would have been a much sort of much shorter odds if he hadn't missed a big chunk of the season through his personal problems. I agree. I think De Bruyne has been the outstanding performer of the season. But in terms of a great price, I think 6-1 on Salah is a great bet.
Okay. And I just want to ask you quickly as well, Simon, about Sergio Aguero, because I think I'm right in saying that he's never been in a PFA Team of the Year. Sergio Aguero, which I couldn't believe when I read that. He's so underrated, Aguero, in my mind.
The most amazing thing for me, I mean, that is an amazing kind of stat, but also in 2011-2012, when, and I know the PFA Team of the Year and Player of the Year awards are voted much earlier in the season,
but
2011-2012, when he had an absolutely fantastic season, scored a hatful of goals as City won the league for the first time in, 44 years. And he lost out in the Young Player of the Year award to Kyle Walker. And there were a few raised eyebrows at the club over that one. It's really strange because if you look at since City since the takeover, and let's be fair, it's only been since the takeover that City have had players kind of challenging for these awards and these honours. They've not had that many players in the Player of the Year team. And you're absolutely right. For some reason, Aguero always seems to miss out. And I think part of the problem is that he's so consistent and he's so good that over 6 years, we've kind of come to expect him to score between 25 and 30 goals every season without really raising any eyebrows. I've got to say, it'll be a big surprise if he's not in the team this year. Simply because he's managed to stay, he scored on a regular basis. He's managed to stay fit, and you know, he's been at he's been the spearhead for a City team that looks like it's walking away with the Premier League.
Do you think he'll be in the City team next year?
That is a very good question. I've got to say, I think he's certainly proved Pep Guardiola wrong this season. I think Pep Guardiola was maybe contemplating making a change in that position. Gabriel Jesus has suffered with injuries this season, and to be fair to Aguero, he has managed to implement this kind of high press that Guardiola demands. There were a few doubts whether physically he would be able to do that, and whether, you know, a player that scores 30 goals a season really does want to press from the front. But he's taken on the challenge. He's got 2 years left on his contract. I think it would be a very brave man that sells Sergio Aguero.
Okay. And we've spoken earlier on the podcast about the big game this weekend, Manchester United versus Liverpool. Derek's very strong on Liverpool to win the game. What are your thoughts, Simon?
Well, I've got to say, if Manchester United try and play Liverpool at their own game, I think Liverpool will win. I've got a feeling that Jose Mourinho will look at it as a game where, if he can take a point, then he remains a place above Liverpool in the Premier League table. Very pragmatic. We all know that Jurgen Klopp will go there and try and win the game. You know, because Liverpool's kind of philosophy is attack is the best form of defence. Listen, if it's an open game, I can only see one winner, and that is Liverpool. But I'll be very surprised if Jose Mourinho plays an expansive game.
Well, my nap this week looks so obvious on the face of things that perhaps it gets a bit scary at that point. Cardiff have won 5 games in a row, failed to concede in 4 of those, and their win over Barnsley midweek, while it got a little bit tighter than perhaps they would have liked, was still fairly comfortable. They're taking on a Birmingham City who are struggling all ends up. They've lost 6 games in a row in the league, aren't really scoring a lot of goals, and were beaten, although they played okay, against new boss Gary Monk's old side, Middlesbrough, on Tuesday. But for me, Cardiff are undoubtedly the team to be backing here, and it sounds daft, doesn't it, at a very short price at the time of recording of 11-20, but I can't see how they lose this game. They tend to score plenty of home goals. They've only lost twice. That was to a very talented side, Fulham, and a very good side in Preston. So for me, 11-20 is good, but I'm going to go an extra little bit further here because I think Cardiff's defence is excellent, and I really struggle to see how Birmingham can do anything at all. I'm going to say that Cardiff are going to score plenty of goals this weekend against Gary Monk's Birmingham. So Cardiff over 2.5 match goals could be of interest to you, but I'm going to take -1 at 13-8 for Cardiff. That's the Championship with myself, Pete Farries. Let's head to Gav Pochalowski and his thoughts on League One.
My nap selection this weekend is a prize which I don't quite understand. It is way too big for a side who are one of the best sides in League One at the moment. It's Plymouth away at Fleetwood. Fleetwood are deemed the favs in this one at 6-4 at home. This is Fleetwood Town who, if they lose this game on Saturday, it will be 9 defeats in 10 in all competitions. Fleetwood Town are bottom 4 at the moment, and last season they finished top 4. Fleetwood Town last season finished 4th, 82 points. If Fleetwood Town win their remaining 12 games to the end of the season, they will still not get as many points this season as they did last. Fleetwood Town all last season, 10 defeats. This season, 17 defeats already, and Fleetwood Town have conceded more goals this season with 12 games left than they did in all of last season. The point being, this is a very different Fleetwood Town to the side that finished fourth last season. And Plymouth Argyle, well, they are looking for their 7th consecutive victory. Already established that Plymouth Argyle a few months ago were bottom of the table. Now they're in the playoffs and they are 15-8 to win away at Fleetwood Town. Can't have that. Plymouth and my play, my nap, at 15-8 to win at Fleetwood. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
I'm always delighted to find a near pick and price in a fixture that should be anything but. So while all eyes will be on the clash of the top two between Luton and Accrington, the value will be at Huish Park, where Yeovil meet Newport in what appears a nothing mid-table affair. Now, it is true that both appear safe, but Newport's outside chance of a playoff berth only ended in midweek with a 3-3 draw against Forest Green, coming from behind to lead 2-1 and then 3-2 and then seeing their season pretty much ended by another draw. They were quite in form until they forced that replay with Spurs in the cup, you might recall. 3 draws and 4 defeats in the 7 games since, and away from home they've only got 1 goal and 1 point on the road from their last 5. That point at a very poor Port Vale side as well. That inability to travel is hugely interesting given that Yeovil Town have 3 clean sheets in their last 4 home games. It's 4 wins in 5 at home, 6 wins in 9. Manchester United among only 3 teams since New Year's Day to get anything at Huish Park. So the 3-1 for Yeovil to win to nil, given those stats, is huge. But with the home side 13-8 and the away side 7-4, it is just a case of playing it simple. And the outright, as always, will be the nap. And that is Yeovil at 13-8.
That's it for the Pump Podcast this week. I do hope you've enjoyed this edition. Thank you to Simon Mullock, our guest from the FWA, the chief football writer with the Sunday Mirror. Thanks, of course, to Derek McGovern, who was after timing as usual, Andy Excel, and, of course, Pete Farries, Gav Pochalowski, and Al Ross, and to Sam Norris, who's looking for back-to-back winning naps on the European scene. If you want to check out all the betting on the William Hill website, just go to sports.williamhill.com, and don't forget, you can get this podcast weekly at audioboom.com just by typing in the punt. And we will be back with a midweek edition on Monday. If you're having a bet this weekend, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.